You're listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolensky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today we are talking about state in React. Such a simple thing, but there's very many ways to approach it. Lots of different things out there. So we're going to try to dive into local state and global state and UI state and data state and caching and API data. And man, there's just tons of stuff to do here. So
yeah,
with me, as always, is Mr. Tolensky. How are you doing today, Scott Tolensky?
Hey, I'm doing okay. I'm doing pretty good. My office is like under a state of transition, so things are a little chaotic. They're Brittany and Kevin chaotic. And do you remember that show?
Brittany and Kevin? No.
There was a show. It was about Britney Spears and Kevin Federline. I don't know if that's his name, but it was called Brittany and Kevin Chaotic. So I like can't say the word chaotic without prefixing it with Brittany and Kevin for some reason. But no, dude, a huge bummer. Yesterday, somebody rear-ended Courtney and her friend and Brooklyn were in the car and her car's all janked up. And I feel so bad. I was like in total like dad rage mode driving out there. And I was like, I was going to crack some skulls. I'm just, you know, everybody's okay. They had to have an ambulance come check out Brooklyn and stuff. It was just,
That's Courtney's awful.
Car's all messed up. So, you know, things have not been exactly carefree the past 24 hours, but you know, all things considered, everybody's safe. And that's it. But yeah, bummer.
So we moved up to our cottage, which it's a funny word that the Canadians use it as, just kind of like a place on the lake where you swim and hang out for the summer. So if this audio is sounding a little bit weird, it's because I haven't totally got my office set up yet and I don't have the compressor running and it's a little echoey in here. So apologies for the audio, but it seems to be working somewhat okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's really okay because you're living the cottage life. You're wearing a flamingo shirt and you're hanging out in the water and stuff. And we just have to look at you on your social media feed, just be like, dang, he's living it right now. So I'm TJing over here.
Yeah. Oh, well, you said TJing and I was Googling it and I was like, what does TJing mean?
that's
TJing.
That's we're getting into state here. That's some local state of my own personal slang that I came up with that I always say it. And I feel like I just like totally neglect the fact that I don't know that people don't know what it means. But it means, well, technically it means totally jealous-ing in.
Okay.
I'm totally jealous-in. Sometimes I'll write TJ and then apostrophe N. So I'm like totally jealousing in. I don't know. It's yeah, it's not good. But yeah, so that's some local state for my own personal slang. Let's get into actual state in applications. And the local state of sponsorships for this episode are going to be LogRocket and FreshBooks. We'll get into both of those later. Those are longtime sponsors at Syntax. We love both those services. And the first thing we want to dive into, I think, is what is state? This was a question that we actually answered in the last potluck, I believe. Somebody asked us, what is state? I hear about state all the time. We answered that question. Maybe we'll do a little bit of recap here. But basically, state itself, what is state in your application? Well, the best way I feel like I could describe it is it's how your application is at any given point. The state of the data could be whether or not the navigation menu is open, whether or not the modal is open, but it could also be your data. Maybe let's say on level up tutorials, I have an array of tutorials that need to be loaded. Those tutorials would also be considered application state. So it can be all sorts of things from global to local, and maybe there's some gray area in between there, but what we're really going to be talking about again is maybe the difference there and maybe some of the different strategies that you can use to wrangle in your state. And obviously state is not specific to React applications. It's pretty much a general concept, right? Any application that you're building in any framework or any language or anything is going to have state at any given point. So even though this episode is specifically about React, you can think about a lot of these concepts in other applications as well. So let's get into what kind of things are kept in state. Now that we have an idea a little bit about what state is, what do you keep in state, Wes?
Yeah, I think it can kind of be broken down into a few different pieces. The first is obviously data, that is your application. I guess it is all data, but if you think about your application, you generally have a few different kinds of data. You've got the temporary client-side data, I like to think. So if you've got data that's coming in from a form input or a search or when someone clicks a button or information about something that the user is currently doing, I like to think of that as like temporary client-side data. And if you need to hold on to that for any amount of time, temporarily, generally you stick that in state. So probably the most common thing in React is that when somebody types into an input box, you send that data immediately into state, and then you reflect that data back into the input box. So it looks like the user is actually typing that data. And that's helpful because when you then go ahead and submit that data, you want to send it off to some server side, you have it in a nice tidy little piece of data. Other types of data is cached server data. So if you've got an API, whether that's GraphQL or JSON or any other type of API, you ping that server and you come back with some data. You need to put that somewhere before you go ahead and display it. And where to put that data is state.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like most beginner React tutorials. I know in my beginner React tutorial, we do this where you hit an API. The one that we do in mine is the MovieDB API, and you hit this API and you get some information back. And sure, you can display that information just straight up, but the way that you end up managing it in most beginner cases is just throwing it into some local state. And then from there, you can move on to more advanced topics, of which we'll talk a little bit more about. There's also UI state, which... again, a lot of this stuff, I'm not making up the names. Well, I guess I am making up the names here, but these aren't like official names. The UI state you could think of as sort of like at any given point, again, like things like think about like a hamburger menu, right? Whether or not that hamburger menu is open or not. That's a piece of state where there's a value somewhere that's set to true or false, and that true or false is going to toggle a React component that shows up, or maybe it animates in, or maybe it drags in, or something like that. But either way, the fact that that menu is open is most likely a Boolean that's just toggled somewhere, or maybe it's like a string or something, depending on how you manage your local state. I wanted to briefly have an aside here about naming things. What's your strategy for naming local state thing? Because this is one thing that I've found. I have gone through several evolutions in my code base about how I name things. And I think it's tricky, but I think I've landed on something that I really love. So I'm interested to hear about how you name state. Like if you were going to be making like a modal, what would you name now that we have hooks, we have to name the functions or maybe you have an action or something. Well, how do you name stuff?
Yeah, usually with those types of things, I like to, I initially started with like cart open, but I've started just sticking is on the front. And I think that might be a little what you do as well, because then I find that my if statements read really nicely. So is nav open and you show like the drop down inside of React. So big fan of that. I'm trying to think about other variables that might not just be.
What about like an action or a function?
I don't really have any really good rules. Do you have a specific rule of how you approach those type of things?
I've had sort of like light rules. And then like last night, this is very specific. Last night I was in one of those galaxy brain states where you can see through the code and you're just like looking at the matrix lines just trickling down, you know, as like, I could see the next line of code I was going to type before I typed it. And I ended up refactoring maybe like 15 components because in Level Up, I've been encountering this really bizarre bug. And I have to assume it's a race condition somewhere, or it's honestly probably something with my state. I really don't know what the problem is, which is not a great way to operate. I have all of my error tracking. I know the conditions in which it happens. I have all of the error logs. I know exactly what's happening, but I cannot reproduce it. I have my account. I do the exact same thing I see my users doing in LogRocket, because I use LogRocket, one of our sponsors today. I see all of that stuff and I still cannot get it to happen. And it's driving me nuts. So I was like, you know what? I know the files in which this is happening. I'm going to take a deep dive into these files and really just try to rewrite them. So I sort of just looked at all this stuff and I came up with maybe better rules than what I had before. Because again, I had ways of naming things, but I didn't have like solid rules. So now, again, everything is going to be it, like is whatever, which it for the most part was. But when I started getting into these components, I saw things like, so I had is tutorial visible, right? That tells you exactly what it is. But then I also had things that was can see video. And I'm like, okay, like, why do I have a can see video? And then I had another one, which was will do something else or will be available. And I'm just thinking like, okay, these things are all sort of describing the same kind of thing, but I'm approaching it from different perspectives as the user or the whatever. So I just rewrote everything to be is tutorial visible, is playlist visible, is this, right? And by really standardizing that, it made my application so much more transparent. Another thing I did is I've sort of come up with rules for how I name actions. So, you know, toggle theater mode, right? If it toggles something, it's toggle theater mode. If it's setting something, it's set link. If it is removing something, it's remove something. But that's pretty much it. So
yeah, putting a verb at the front of the function, I find it tells you that it does something and it should tell you what it does. I'd be curious to see if other people have some sort of rules to how you name your things. So I've certainly written.
I'm very interested in that.
Or I've certainly had like different approaches to like get movies, or and then I would do go get movies. And
like, yeah.
That's annoying. Like I should have some sort of system in place. I would love to hear what other people think about what their system is, because I think that would probably it's like a linting rule, right? Like the code still works, but I would love to have some sort of rules that makes me a better dev.
Same here. And just I actually, as we were talking here, I was thinking after this episode or the next one, I would just go pop over to Notion and just write out the simple rules to how you write state stuff in my application for other devs. It's one of those things that I think can make an application way better, because even changing is visible to is tutorial visible makes things make way more sense. So it's a small little thing, but it definitely has a big impact. And after refactoring these components, I'm just reading through my code. And last night I just looked at it and I was just like, you know, job well done here. You know, it made me feel really good. And I'm very confident that this issue that I'm facing is going to get worked out. But it's one of those things you can really go down the rabbit hole with. So next let's talk about global state versus local state and what the heck that is. You hear talked about global state versus local state. Do you want to take a stab at it?
Yeah. So the idea of global state versus local state is that your data, let's say something like is nav open, and then you have another piece of data like list of movies. Does that data need to be globally available? I mean, does it need to be available everywhere in your application, or should any component in your application be able to access that data? Or should that data stay contained within the component that uses it? And there's certainly arguments on either end. Local state is certainly much easier to make components that are you can move them around. They contain their own data. They often contain the logic for fetching that data. Whereas global state is often, it's much easier, because if you have the data living at the top of your application, you can certainly pass it down or use some sort of thing like context or Redux to inject that data into the components that need it. So it's not really one versus the other. I think generally all applications will have both global state as well as local state. And I think you need to ask yourself, does this data need to be accessed outside of this component? So if it's the case for, it's a really good example of in my Node course, I would have the is cart open. And I thought like, that's clearly just a Boolean that only needs to be available to the cart, because I only need inside of the cart to open or close it. But then I found myself needing to open the cart when somebody added something to the cart. So I thought, oh, now I need to move that like that setter, the thing that updates state, outside of the cart, because now it needs to be accessed in other parts of my application. So generally I'll start with local state, and then if I think that I won't need it, and then it's fairly easy to refactor out into a global state. Things like data, like let's say you have a list of movies, I'll generally try to keep those as close to the component as I need them, because like you could have three or four nested components, you just have that at the top. But then again, if you do need it elsewhere, you stick that in global. Do you have any sort of like rules or any methods for determining whether it's local or global?
You know, we just did this huge rewrite of Level Up, and I definitely learned quite a bit about it, because I've gone through lots of changes in my global state. So like before, I was using something called Meteor Session, which stored things at session variables, but it was reactive. It was really cool. And then I moved to, I don't even know what I moved to next. I might've moved to Redux next, and then from Redux to Apollo Client, and now to Context. And I haven't been happy with many of those systems because I found it difficult to add an update and change a new state. And ever since moving to my new system, it's become way easier to take things out of local state and move them into global state very easily. So my rules are really just, again, I like to think about it as just ahead of time, what are the situations where I'm going to need to access this, toggle this, whatever, right? And you'd think something like as simple as a main the navigation, the hamburger nav opening and closing, you think something as simple as that should just be local state. But let's say you have the nav open and the user logs in from that navigation, they click that, they log in, and all of a sudden the menu doesn't close. Do you want to go have to pass that function all the way down into your log in function to be able to do that? So at that point, I've really like erred on the side of putting most things in global state, but I think there is like definitely like form state for me belongs in local state. Like little toggles and little things like that mostly belong in local state. And like some of the larger aspects of the site, you know, is the navigation open? Is the shopping cart open? What's in the shopping cart? Those all go into global state for me. And then obviously all of my data is in Apollo cache. So I don't really think too much about that as being global state. But I don't really have any hard and fast rules other than just trying to visualize where exactly this needs to be accessed.
Yeah. I think there was like, people sort of got scared of global state because back in the day, everyone would just throw all the data on the window. And I think sometimes people mix up this concept of global variables and just have everything globally available and just reaching outside to it. And this idea of just having a single global store for your data and having a method to inject that data into the components that need it. And I think we've got plenty of good options. We'll talk about that to put them in there. So yeah, nothing wrong with global state. And also like we talk about component reusability and all these things all the time. But if I'm not kidding myself, I know that most of my applications, I don't share components to other projects. I know that my data is here and my components need those data.
Yeah, totally.
That data.
Yeah. Do you personally, do you think of your Apollo client as like, or cache as global state? I think that's sort of what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you can put everything goes into the Apollo store. Yeah. You can even put your local data in there. So
you can't. Yeah.
I definitely think that is a global store, and you can only have one of them as well per app, I believe. So
definitely. And we can talk about that in the next section, which is going to be managing local state. But before we get into that, I wanted to quickly transition here into one of our sponsors. The ultimate transition there. So this week's sponsor is LogRocket. Now, I mentioned earlier on in the episode that I'm having some issues with one very particular weird use case. And to be honest, I was seeing my error pop up in Sentry, and Sentry is giving me some good information. It was sort of telling me where the bug was happening, but I couldn't necessarily figure out how the user was managing to do these things. So I fired open my LogRocket and I watched as the user clicked a link and it showed me exactly what happened. Now, obviously, as I mentioned, I haven't solved this bug because I haven't been able to reproduce, but at least now I know exactly what the user was doing. And importantly, I know who the user was, so I can look at their user object. I can see exactly the steps they were able to do to reproduce this issue, and I'm hard at work. And after we get done recording, I'm going to be solving this bug. But LogRocket has made that absolutely possible, because with LogRocket, what you get is a session replay. It's a video and you can drag it. You can see the session. You can see the network responses. You can see everything. The Redux store. If I used Redux, that would be a great use case as well. And allows you to see all this happening in the same time as the user's doing it. So it allows you to solve those bugs quickly and easily. Again, I'm going to be really diving into this later today here a little bit more. As much as I love Rocket, I can't wait to get in there and solve this bug. So if you want to get 14 days for free, head on over to logrocket.com/syntax and sign up today. Great service. Really love using it myself. And again, I think some people maybe occasionally, you know, they hear our sponsor reads and they think we're getting a little like blurring the lines. Getting cheese, blurring the lines between the, you know, stuff that we like and stuff that we're trying to sell you or something. But to be honest, we use this stuff and, you know, I don't think I would be hawking it here if I wasn't just in it myself and loving it. So,
yeah, that's yeah. It's funny. Like some of our sponsors like LogRocket and FreshBooks and Sentry, they do very well on our podcast because we actually really love them. But that doesn't go across to every sponsor that we have because we don't necessarily use and love every single sponsor that we have.
Sure.
So it's why it's such a good fit, right? Like ideally, these sponsors will find people that have podcasts that actually use and love their product. So it's we're happy to have them on.
Yeah, absolutely. Very happy. All right. So let's get into managing local state. Now, your options for managing local state, you know, there's probably lots more than here than we're going to get into. But the main ones are really just what's built into React, the new use state hook, as well as set state, which has been here from the get. And yeah, I personally have just loved refactoring my application to use state. Because again, it allows me to name things better with less code, right? I can have a little function that's set this, and that's like not very much code. And then I don't have to write a whole separate function to do the whole set state thing in. And I absolutely love using use state. Personally, it's really changed the readability of my application. If I see a set state call in my code base, I'm like, get it out of here. I have to convert this. But that's just me. I'm obsessed with refactoring sometimes.
Yeah, the hooks has made just local state so easy because it has decoupled the like what it looks like and where it lives. It's totally decoupled it and made it really easy to inject that kind of local state into something. So big fan of using hooks and use state and for local state. I previously had used Apollo for some local state, but I found that it was just too cumbersome to have to write GraphQL queries for setting Booleans.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're working on getting it on making it better, but I remember talking to them. I'm like, I just want set state for Apollo.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to throw it in there. And that's kind of against the whole idea of GraphQL because GraphQL is so rigid and typed, and you have to know ahead of time like what it looks like, and you have to write a query to pull that data out. And I just want a variable.
Yeah, I was doing so. I sort of had a flow like that going where I was doing direct writes to the cache, and then I had my own functions that were doing direct writes to the cache, and it was sort of all obfuscated behind the scenes so that like you just had one single function that was like toggle nav, and that's all you needed to do.
Oh, yeah.
But like the amount of code that I needed to write to have that was just sort of annoying to do all the time. And to be honest, you know, the Apollo client state is awesome, but I did feel like it was a little too fresh. A little too green. It hadn't necessarily matured.
I couldn't find a way to test it either.
Oh,
I just
dude.
In my course, we don't test it because there's just no way to
it. Doesn't work. Yeah. And if you Google anything about testing local state, you'll probably find three or four GitHub issues that I created at some point and that people are still like, has this been resolved yet? So, you know, I love the Apollo team, but I hope they figure that part out of it at some point soon, because like for real, the testing piece is non-existent. And that like, especially if you have mixed, because they advertise, you know, the ability to do a query that pulls in your data plus the client state at the same time in one query. Yeah, that's great. But then I found myself having to have a totally separate query just for my test that didn't include the client state just to get the test working. And it's like, that is not a good way to test your code. So I was not happy with that. So I converted over to context for my global state. But all right, back to managing local state here. There's a bit of always a thing that comes into play when you get into more advanced components, like when you have maybe like a toggle, let's say a modal, right? You trigger the modal from the outside, but that modal needs to close itself from the inside. And you probably might not want to put all of those in global state. So then what do? Well, you have to pass the state and the update state function down into the component. That's like a huge question that people always ask is, how do I traverse my state, right? I have the state in this one component, now I want it in this other one. And the answer is always, well, you got to create a parent component that includes both the state value as well as the state setter or whatever, and then pass those down to both. Yeah, I don't know. This is one of those things that I used to do all the time, and now it like makes me kind of upset to do so, because depending on how many times you have to pass down or where you have to pass it, it can get kind of cumbersome, kind of dense, and kind of unnecessary. And I find myself reaching for context and global state at most of those times. I need that sort of stuff.
That's the sort of the thing in React, is that you can't pass data up unless you have a function that is passed down. Like, if you've got your setter and your data at a low level, there's no way to send it upstream unless you move that up. And React has a word for that. It's called lifting state, which essentially just means put it higher.
So you can pass it down. Salmon state. You know, salmon jump up a river.
Oh, that's actually awesome. That's actually an awesome name for like a library where
you could use an emoji. Like, is there a salmon emoji? Like
use salmon. I don't think so. Hold on. Let's figure this out. This is important.
Innovators. We are innovators here. And you know, I don't have to do any. I can be the name guy. I can just come up with the names and then somebody else can write the code.
There's a couple. There's three fish emojis. There's a blue fish on iOS, a blue fish on a rod, and then a tropical fish. So, what about there's no salmon.
Like a sashimi.
there's a fish cake.
Fish cake. Woo.
Oh, and there's sushi as well. No sashimi, though.
Okay. Well, we got some work to do. First thing we got to do is get the salmon emoji standardized. Then we can begin work on this library.
Okay, good.
So next up, I wanted to talk briefly about state machines. And I say briefly because, to be honest, I personally am not that experienced in state machines. I am aware of them. I sort of am aware of how state machines are. I would be interested in having a state machines expert on this show to talk a bit more about them. And Wes
has his finger
raised. I didn't
even tell you.
Yes.
Because like 6 minutes ago, or like 6 minutes before we recorded this podcast, I messaged David Capiano and said, can you come on and explain them to us?
Yeah.
And he said, sure. So he's going to be on probably in 2 weeks, I think he said would be good.
Cool.
So we'll have him, which is good because it'll be like soon enough after this comes out that it's like fresh in our minds as to how it works.
That's great. I'd be very excited to talk to David, because his library, XState, is really the state machine library of choice. And I see that XState now is using the new organizational GitHub, where it has the @XState/React, and they're using hooks. So there's like a little use machine hook. And so XState really seems to be your application state can only exist in several different ways, right? There's the active state, the inactive state, and the cancel state or whatever. Basically, you're defining these ways that your state or your application is, and you don't worry about the little individual parts of the state. So making invalid state parts not possible is my very, very rudimentary understanding of it. So hopefully when David comes on here, we can get him to give us the whole rundown.
Yeah, it's just there's another good example they have here is a fetch machine, where you have an idle state, you have a loading state, and you have a success state and a failure state. And each of those states can have a bunch of information that's associated with it. So what to happen when there's a successful, what to happen when there's an error, where to fetch the data from, things like that. So I'm really excited to have him on. I'm intentionally not going to look into it too much, just because I think it makes for a better podcast.
I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to look into it really in depthly, and then But then I'm going to pretend that I haven't. So then I can sound
You do
smart.
It in depthly.
Oh, so it's like this. What you're saying is this. Oh, okay. I'm getting it.
Wow. All right. That sounds great.
Yeah. So the next section we're going to get into is going to be global state. But before we do, we're going to get some new fresh state in here with one of our fresh sponsors. So this is, we're refreshing the state here. And this is FreshBooks. It's one of our longtime sponsors that helps you keep your books, accounting, bookkeeping, all that stuff, invoices, organized and modern and excellent. So with more about FreshBooks is Wes.
FreshBooks is the cloud accounting software that you need. If you are a small business, if you're a freelancer, if you're just someone who needs to send a couple invoices out at the end of the year, seems easy just to make a Word document. But when it comes to reporting, making sure people have paid, forgetting if people have paid, that kind of stuff can really be a headache. So check out FreshBooks. You're going to get invoicing, expenses, time tracking, projects, payments. The mobile app is awesome. I love the mobile app just for inputting receipts, things like that. What I'll often do is even when I'm out, I'll just have a receipt. I'll just take a snapshot of it, input all the details, and then stuff the receipt in my pocket. And I know that I don't have to like worry about keeping it, because like receipts, you know how receipts like fade over time, or if they get caught, they go all black.
They're like, it's like you didn't see this movie. You didn't see Back to the Future, did you?
No.
It's like the photo's fading.
Should I?
Sure. Yeah.
Don't get that. Go to freshbooks.com/syntax and use syntax in the How Did You Hear About It section. It's going to give you a 30-day unrestricted free trial. Thanks so much to FreshBooks for sponsoring. All right. Let's talk about global state. This is a bit of a big one. So we talked about what global state is. It's this idea that you store all of the data related to your application in some sort of store. And a store is just a fancy word for an object in JavaScript. It's where you keep your data. And then usually along with that data is a bunch of instructions as to how to update that data, how to fetch that data, a bunch of little stuff around that. So you want to take a stab at a first couple ways to do global state in React?
Yeah. I think the most popular one is probably Redux. It's been the king of global state for a little while in React. The problems with Redux are that it's really kind of complicated and hard to pick up. I think the people who have Redux click easily for them don't necessarily understand that. But like the people who don't have it click easily for them could really just bash your head against Redux for months and months and months, because there's a lot of boilerplate code and people complain about that. I complain about that. It is I think some people are like, I don't understand the complaints, but there is a lot of boilerplate code that to do some very simple things. So Redux is complicated. It's hard to learn, but it's very, very super useful. It's very organized and structured. It makes your application a lot more solid. I found my application state was like very, very nice when I was using Redux. I understood exactly what everything was, the states, how it all worked. It has some really great tooling around it, such as the time traveling features, and all of the Redux dev tools like almost make the cost to entry totally worth it, because the Redux dev tools are really second to none in that sort of regard. They're excellent being able to see your state. And this all happens because of Redux's use of basically immutable data. And so we say that word occasionally, immutable. It really just means that this data isn't, you're not changing it, right? So with Redux, you have your store and you're not updating your store necessarily, but you're creating a new copy of it. And because you're creating a new copy of it, you're able to go back and see any version of that store at any given time, allowing you to basically time travel, those kind of things, especially in the dev tools.
Yeah, let's talk about what that is, time traveling.
Yeah.
Like Scott just said, you're let's say you have an array of Scott and Wes, and then you add another item to that array, like Brooklyn. Now we have an array with three items in it. The idea behind time traveling is that because the data is immutable, meaning that we didn't just update that array. We have two arrays now. We have the old array, Scott and Wes, and we have the new array, Scott, Wes, and Brooklyn. And the idea is that with time traveling is that you can go back at any time and go back to that earlier data, or undo actions. So in Redux, you have actions, which are things that you do, add a name, and then you have a reducer, which figures out how you add that name to the array. So the sort of the logic as to how you're adding items in there. And then the time traveling will allow you to go back in time. And it's kind of cool because you can turn off any of the actions. It doesn't have to be sequential. So you could go back and turn off three or four actions and it will just replay the application as if those three things never happened, but everything before and after them did happen, which is pretty, pretty cool for if you're doing animations or you want to like replay something, you want to say like, oh, I added this item to the cart and you want to just go back and forth. Just it's such a handy tool. And I think that's why people absolutely love Redux is Scott said, it's worth the pain and the setup and the boilerplate for that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. You do get people who are very into Redux and then you get the people who are like standing on the outside being like, but I don't get it. And then, you know, there's this sort of that back and forth there in terms of like, well, is it worth it to learn this stuff? And I think learning Redux is absolutely worth it. That said, I do think it's kind of unnecessarily complicated. I personally don't love I know some people would be mad about this, but I like a little bit of magic. Like I don't love a ton of magic where I don't know where things are happening, but like, if I could just, instead of having to call an action, which does another thing, which hits the redo, like instead of doing all that, I would rather just call a function like I do right now and have that do everything else behind the scenes. But then again,
yeah,
whatever. There's other approaches here of what you're going to get into. And there's a ton of new Hooks-based libraries too. Ever since Hooks was released, this one that was probably, I don't know if this is the most popular one, but I've been seeing it around a lot, which is called Easy Peasy, which is basically a wrapper for Redux. One of the cool things about something like this is that you don't have to really learn Redux in the same sort of way. You still get access to the Redux dev tools. The code that you're writing, the syntax for it is definitely smaller, cleaner, whatever than Redux. And it is a little bit easier. That's why they call it Easy Peasy. But again, there's a lot of little libraries that are popping up like this right now with Hooks that make global state more easy. So actually, I'm really interested if you're using a global state Hooks library, tweet us out. I want to know what people are using in their code because it's really interesting to me. Do you have anything else on Redux?
Yeah, I just think like Redux the reason why Redux got so popular is because the whole idea of global state in React without Redux initially was that you had to pass things down all the way down. So if you've got a component at your top and you've got a component listed 8 levels deep, then you had to pass all of those downs via props. And Redux made it easy to keep your data and keep your actions, your functions on how to update them at your top level. And then you can inject that data and those updaters at a lower level. Now that's obviously changed. Now we've got context, but that's the reason why it got so popular. And that's also the reason why a lot of people are sort of moving away from it right now. Not because Redux is bad, but because the only thing that they were using it for was the ability to do that is now much easier in just pure React.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. So let's dive into the next one, which is MobX, which is another one I have not used. People who use it seem to like it. I don't use it. It's a little different. They use decorators. They use observables. It's basically, as it says, it's based on observables. And for those of you who don't know, I got this little, I guess you could call this a definition of observables from this website. I just Googled and found hype.codes. I don't know anything about this site, but I thought this was a really nice description of observables, which is an observable is like a stream, for those of you who know what streams are, and it allows to pass zero or more events where a callback is called for each event. Often, observable is preferred over a promise because it provides the features of a promise plus more. So it's sort of like a promise, if you can think about that. However, it allows for listening for specific events or waiting and pausing on different times. So MobX is based on observables. The syntax is cleaner and nicer than Redux, but it does use things like decorators and observables. So if you don't know those concepts, it might be worth taking some time to dive into those. Again, I haven't used MobX, but they have a good size community and it seems to be well-liked by the users.
Yeah, it seems to be one of those things that is not all that popular, but the people that do like it are crazy about it. And it seems to be a really good use case for whatever it is they're working on.
Yeah, it sort of emerged as like the first major competitor to Redux. So I think that gave them a bit of a heads up. Next is going to be context. And this is what I use for my global state. I use React's context. And I get a lot of questions about this because people are like, well, doesn't that context cause a bunch of unnecessary re-renders if you have all of your data in one provider? And sure, it would, but I have all of my data in several providers. So what I have is a little system that has several different providers. And then I have like a merger that essentially merges all the providers so that in my app.js, I just have one provider there that sort of encapsulates all the other ones. And then I have several different global states, so to say, for all of my different types of states. So anything related to the checkout, right? Is the checkout open? Is there an item in the cart? You know, is there order complete? Those things are all living in the checkout context. I have one that's the app context. Is the navigation open? That sort of thing. I have one that is the, actually the alert context. Is an alert fired? And I, so that way I have like global toast messages. And what's great about this is that anytime you want to call any of these or update any of these functions, all you have to do is use the use context hook. And it's amazing because I don't have to do anything. I just say use context and then pass in the context, and then I get to pull out my send alert function. I have a send alert function. You pass it a string. It calls, updates the global state. The alert pops up. If I do a send error, it does the same alert, but the background color is red. And I can create these little functions inside of my context components that are able to update and manage all of my state. A lot of people do this same sort of concept using use reducer, but most of mine are to be honest, is just use state with inside of my context. So I use a lot of use state, and that's pretty much it. Instead of use reducer, to me is like a little bit overkill for a lot of these things. If you want to check out the merger that I have, I think I have call it a provider composer. I didn't write that. I actually got most of this code from somewhere else. And although I want to change the name because I don't really love the provider composer. Rather call it like mergerizer or something fun.
Yeah. So you're saying that if you've got multiple providers, or if you have one provider with all of your data in that, then that will trigger too many re-renders on things that are not necessarily changing?
Yeah, my understanding was that when you update the state of a provider, every bit of code that touches that provider is updated.
Okay.
So like if you were to have everything within one provider and you were to open the navigation, then my alert would trigger a re-render on the alert component. It would trigger a re-render on another component, checkout component, whatever. But if I have in its own individual islands, then it won't.
That's interesting. That's a kind of a cool way to do it. We should also say that like the whole idea of context is that context is just like a bus that gets your data where it's going. Context doesn't hold any of the data itself. So if you want to hold data, you still, like Scott said, you still put it in state. And if you want to update that data, you still have state updaters. And then how you get that, like how you teleport that data and those updaters from the top of your application down to where it needs to be is via context. So context is sort of like your data is in the air, but before you can actually grab it out of the air, you need to use context.
Yeah. And let me tell you, I didn't love context until hooks came out. It wasn't until use context came out that it really solidified it for me, but also made it seem a lot more elegant and easy. Because now it's like a one-liner.
The render props are just too much, right?
It's just too much code. How much code is a render prop to get that stuff out of there? It's like 5 lines of additional JSX. It just like clouds your DOM, but your JSX. It just clouds.
Yeah.
It. Yeah.
It's funny. There's so many things that we're saying today is just like, it used to be so terrible and now it's great.
Yeah, right? Yeah, except for Mixins.
Except for Mixins, yeah. I use context as well, just like Scott was saying. A big fan of how it works, especially now with hooks. I think I reach for it in almost all of my applications as a default. And then if I want to go more GraphQL, then I go for Apollo. But I don't even reach for Redux anymore for any of my applications. It's just either context or Apollo.
Yeah, yeah, same here. Cool. So let's get into the last section here, which is going to be Apollo. Now, Apollo is just really a library for GraphQL, of which there are several of these libraries. So we can't talk about them, obviously, all because there's too many of them. There's Urkel. There is Relay. There's a whole bunch. Apollo manages the cache of your entire application, and you can think of it as sort of like your Redux store. So anytime you call for data, it pulls in that data and caches it. Then if you try to get that data again, your Apollo store is going to be like, whoa, 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 we already have this data, let's pull it. Or you can do another fetch off the server if you need to grab fresh data. In addition, you can also have your client state, your local state, like we had mentioned there. Your client state can be saved as data. And again, managing your global state that's not the data coming in from your APIs, as we both mentioned, can be a bit of a pain. But the system's nice. Like when I first saw it, I was like, this is really cool. I can do everything through Apollo. I don't need Redux. But after using it again, I think there are some kinks to work out and some little things here and there. That's at a, you know, it is really nice to be able to just say, oh yeah, also give me the client state in here as well. But yeah, that's all not good.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good rundown of state in React, how you get your data where you need it to be, how you update the data when you need to update it. It's a pretty, it seems like such a simple thing where you just have an object, you want to change the data, you change the data. But when you really get into it, both in terms of like performance and immutability and writing testable code and being able to have good dev tools, you get really into simply just storing data in an object. So hopefully that was helpful to you. If you've got anything to add, make sure you tweet us at SyntaxFM on Twitter. We'd love to hear what you have to say about this.
Yeah. I'm of the mind that some of the state stuff, like some of the problems that people talk about in state aren't necessarily the same problems that a beginner or smaller applications will have. So people might look at some of this stuff and be like, I don't get it. Why don't you just use UState or whatever for everything? But as your application grows, it changes in different sort of ways. And just know that there are people who need to solve these problems, because these problems are very super real with what happens when your application grows to this size. And again, not all small applications will pop up and have these same sort of issues. So if you're listening to all this and you're like, I don't understand why I need any of these hardcore tools, like this, you just wait.
Just wait. You will eventually stub your toe on something and you'll say, oh, that's why people are spending so much time on these types of problems. What about sick picks today? What do you got? You have a sick pick for me?
Let me think.
I have one.
I'll see it.
All right. Well, you go ahead and find your sick pick. I am going to sick pick a keyboard. Someone sent me this keyboard a while ago. It wasn't the company. It was just someone who listens and thought that I should try a mechanical keyboard, because I've been a MacBook keyboard or the Apple keyboard for 10 years, and I love it, and I've tried many times to get into mechanical keyboards, and it seems odd that this whole mechanical keyboard sort of genre, where you put it together yourself and you have to spend all this time configuring it, and it's never been all that appealing to me, especially with the how loud they are, because I record screencasts for a living, and you might even hear me typing. So this is the Mass Drop Control keyboard, and I brought it up to the cottage here because I don't have another Mac keyboard, and I thought I'd try it, and I forced myself to figure out how to remap some of the keys, and I have to say I'm actually really liking it. I'm surprised. Once I forced myself to use it for a couple days now, I'm feeling really good about it. It's got like a rainbow LED on the bottom, which my kids love. It's wired, which sucks, but I'm sure I'll get a Bluetooth one at some point. But a big fan of it. It's called the Mass Drop Control Keyboard, and I think you can buy it on drop.com. Big fan.
Yeah, so I'm currently using a mechanical keyboard myself. I have the Keychron K1. It's low profile and it's Mac specific. So like the keys are really flat and they remind me a lot of like the chiclet style on the MacBook. So I was I was really interested in this keyboard because it's a mechanical switch. And I was thinking, okay, this is like a nice little bridge between a mechanical keyboard and whatever. It's also Bluetooth and has all the fun LEDs and all the Mac keys, right? Where a lot of the ones just are like not Mac specific. And the point of actuation, I believe it's called, the point in which it registers a key press, is before the click. It's driving me nuts. I'll rest my finger on the key and it'll type a letter because the key is slightly depressed. No click, but it still registers a key press. And I'm probably going to return it. I took a photo of my desk and I got like a billion Instagram comments. What keyboard is that?
Instagram is the worst. I put a huge banner. I'm like, this is a control keyboard. And like 400 people are, hey, what keyboard is that?
Yeah.
And Instagram people are the worst for asking what keyboard is that. It gets you the likes, but
every single time I couldn't just paste in, it's the Keytron. I had to paste in, it's the Keytron, but I'm not sure if I like it. I think I'll return it.
Yeah.
I just want to ignore it. So, I'm like, I don't know. I'm back and forth. Cause to be honest, the typing experience is really nice. And if I can like train myself to use it correctly, then that'd be fine. But it's like, I spent $70 on it. So I was like, you kind of want it to be, I don't know, perfect. That said, it does work really well. I don't know. Other than the typing issue.
Other Which than like it doesn't type, the only thing that it's supposed function. To do. Well, the keyboard's main function is A, to type, and B, to get the likes on the gram.
Yeah, so and C, to have rainbow-colored LEDs.
That's true.
Mine's set to be teal right now, which is really nice because it's my brand colors, you know, teal.
I want to change mine, but I can't figure out how to, like, this whole, you have to like install 100 things. Ugh. And there's these...
If it gets to install anything, I'm like,
I don't want a hobby. I just want it to work.
Yep.
Which is, yep. I think most people are into these keyboards because it's a hobby, and I don't want it to be a hobby.
I don't want it to be a hobby either, right? I know. My sick pick is going to be another podcast. My podcast sick picks, people seem to really love. So I've been doing a little bit of hunting for some new podcasts, and I've been trying some out here. Been going on a bit of a hunt for different ones. And I don't really love tech podcast or even programming podcast. There's only a few I listen to, like the React podcast.
Syntax is the best.
Never miss an episode of Syntax. I hear the hosts are both very smart and very, very
and handsome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exceedingly. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm sort of skeptical about getting into too many tech podcasts, but this one has been really good. It's right up my alley. It's called Command Line Heroes, and it is history of web dev stuff. So the first couple episodes were just okay. They were doing like the whole Apple and Microsoft history, but then they got into like a Linux history, and then they're doing like a DevOps history. The most recent episode that was released on today is just called Creating JavaScript. And I haven't listened to it yet, but it's all about the history of JavaScript. And there's one on BASIC and all sorts of stuff. Again, tech podcasts are not typically my thing, but this is right on my alley. I love history. And there's a lot of really great episodes. It's narrated really well. It's high production value. They do it in seasons. So it's called Command Line Heroes. And I've really enjoyed this podcast.
They asked us to be on this, hey?
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Red Hat is behind this.
Yeah.
Red Hat. They sent us an email to host it, to host one of the episodes, I think.
Whoa.
It was like super short notice though. So I think I said we can't do it. I think you were on it. Maybe we should check.
Maybe we should check. I would be on that podcast. I'm a big fan now.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Command Line Heroes. Maybe you'll hear me and Wes on it. Who knows? That might be fun. That's it. My shameless plug today is August. My shameless plug today is going to be the latest Level Up Tutorials course, which is called Gatsby E-Commerce. Have you ever been curious about how people do e-commerce with static site generators and Gatsby specifically? Well, this is the good. It's not just good. It's great. It's not just great. It's incredible. This is the incredible start to e-commerce with Gatsby. Now, this isn't the advanced course, but what we are doing in this course is first, we build a Gatsby site with just Stripe that allows you to just accept payment via Stripe. Then we do another Gatsby site where we connect to Shopify and use this iframed buy button that has an iframe cart and does everything for you. And then lastly, we show you the very basics of building your own buy now button directly with Shopify. The course that's coming out in August, this will be the announcement of the August course, is going to be Advanced Gatsby E-Commerce, which is just going to be Gatsby and Shopify exclusively. And we're going to be building a really nice full-on site. So if you are interested in learning Gatsby and e-commerce, head on over to leveluptutorials.com/pro and sign up today. Save 25% if you sign up for the year. So do that now. Right now. Drop what you're doing. Sign up.
I'm just going to plug all of my courses again, westboss.com/courses. I've got courses on React and Node and CSS Grid and Flexbox. Some are paid, some are free. Check them all out. Westboss, WESBOS.com/courses.
Sick.
I think that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in. Apologies if my audio was not as good as it usually is.
Don't apologize for anything ever.
Just no, we get lots of hate when the audio is not perfect. So
I understand sure that. If I listen to a podcast and someone's eating during the podcast or I'm like ready to get on Twitter and be like, what are you doing? And then I don't do that. But, you know.
Oh boy. All right. That's it for today. Thanks for tuning in and we'll catch you at the next one.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.